You are listening to a Banzai Retro Club podcast. Language and topics may not always be appropriate for younger listeners. Press 1 for a groovy topic from the 1970s. Press 2 for an awesome topic from the 1980s. Or press 3 for a slamming topic from the 1990s. Please choose now. Too late. We have made your selection for you. Let's start the show.
Welcome to another episode of 80s Mixtape Auto Reverse. This is a Banzai Retro Club production. We are kind of part of the Banzai Retro Club podcast, and we kind of do these little sideshows and offshoots occasionally. So I'm your host, Scott, and I have two very special guests with me tonight. One is a returning co-host from our previous show that we used to have a couple years ago back in from 80s Reboot Overdrive. And then we also have another one that is joining us for the first time. So I'm going to start with Robin. And Robin, I recently met Robin. She is it's Robin Sayles, S-A-Y-L-E-S, which is, you know, it's a great name, by the way. I love it. It's very, it's like a great, it would be a great name to have in media field. Robin Sayles. It just sounds good. Rolls off the tongue. Anyway, I met Robin back in August of this year, which is 2018. And she is the organizer of a meetup group here in the St. Pete area for podcasters. And we got talking the first day that we have the inaugural podcast meetup for St. Pete podcasters. We got talking about music and stuff, and of those of you who listen, you know that I'm a huge music fan. So it was easy to talk to Robin about that. And then she chimed in and started talking about concerts. I'm like, you know, this is a great idea. We should talk about concerts. And then, so we decided to go ahead and try to arrange something. So now, before I get to Chris, Robin, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and sure. Kind of introduce yourself and tell the listeners who you are.
Thanks so much, Scott. Sure. This is going to be awesome. Pun intended, this is going to rock. So as Scott said, I'm Robin Sayles. I work with a lot of salespeople. I'm married into the name. It was destiny. And I run a branding and communications coaching and facilitation company called Launching Your Success, where I teach people how to be fascinating. And when I'm not doing that, I am the co-founder of St. Pete Podcasters, where we help support our local St. Pete podcasting and creative community. And it's growing and growing, and it's tons of fun. And underneath all of that, I am just a dyed-in-the-wool music junkie. My parents are ex-hippies. I am going to talk about my first concert today, but it's not really my first concert, because my first concert apparently was Kiss and Alice Cooper when I was 3. So I come by my live concert obsession honest.
Okay, cool. All right. And our other co-host is Chris. Now, Chris Warren, if you guys listen to our 80s Reboot podcast in the past, Chris is also a Tampa local, you know, Tampa Pinellas area, and he used to be in a band. So, and he's a very good friend of mine. We hang out quite often. It's awesome.
Often. Very often.
Yes, we often hang out. Thanks to your wife, who's from the Chicago area, that we hit it off so well, and then boom, here we go. We got a friendship and a podcast partnership that we do. So a couple years ago, we did a show that I'm kind of, you know, the 80s Mixtape Auto Reverse, which is what I've brought on board to the Banzai Retro Club. And Chris and I and another guy named Tim did a series on all of the 80s and each year that all the heavy metal albums came out. Heavy metal, hard rock, whatever you want to call it. There's a lot of genres kind of fit into the hard rock and heavy metal thing. And we had so much fun doing it. I've been dying to get him back on the show, and timing just hasn't worked out. But Chris, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and, you know, bring the listeners that are new to the Bonsai Retro Club up to speed, and you know, so go gotcha. Ahead. What do you got?
Yeah. So like Scott said, we did every year in the 80s on the podcast with, and that was so much fun. We had a great time. We had a great time doing that and learned a little bit about each other, learned a little bit about music. So it was great. But yeah, Chris Warren. So I was in a band at one point, kind of a heavy metal, hard rock, hybrid kind of band. Played a lot of shows, did a lot of stuff, had a lot of fun. And yeah, I love talking about music. I was a music junkie since I was a little kid. Not listening to a lot of heavy metal when I was young. A lot of Elton John from my parents' music. A lot of blues music. Sort of raised me, even some ABBA from my Aunt Nancy. Cool. Gave me some ABBA influences. So, and I just love music. I absolutely love music. I think I bore my wife sometimes talking about music, but, and she's going to want me to mention a concert, I think, on this show at some point. I mean, that's not going to happen, but I'll do my best to keep her happy. But yeah, I'm all in on this podcast. When Scott brought up the idea of doing this, concerts are not quite, I don't think, what they were when we were growing up. When a band came to your town, it was an event. The camp out for tickets, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of changed in this day and age. Smaller venues, things like that. So it's good to relive some of those moments.
Great compilation tape, like breaking up is hard to do, and takes ages longer than it might seem. You gotta kick it off with a killer to grab attention. Then you gotta take it up a notch. But you don't wanna blow your wad, so then you gotta cool it off a notch. There are a lot of rules.
12 albums, 1 cent. Find our ad in Sunday's paper, take it to your mailbox. You'll get a lot more music. You'll get a lot more life. Look in your Sunday paper.
Welcome, listener. For those about to rock, we salute you. This is our podcast dedicated to exploring and talking about the greatness that was the music of the best decade. If you're ready for the best in retro music topics on the planet, we present for your enjoyment 80s mixtape Auto Reverse.
So if you're both Florida guys, who remembers Specs and going and standing out line in front of Specs to get your actual tickets?
Specs on 66th Street.
Which is now like a Red Lobster or something.
Which is,
how sad
it's
is that?
A restaurant. You know what? Actually, that building is gone.
That's right.
Yeah, they tore that whole building down. But Specs on 66th Street, I camped out quite often there getting tickets for concerts coming to town. That was the place to do it, especially. I grew up in St. Pete, actually. I grew up in the Shore Acres area and the Meadowlawn area of St. Pete. So Specs Music on 66th Street is very knowledgeable to me. Had some fun in that parking lot.
I grew up down in Southeast Florida, West Palm Beach, Lake Worth, and we had Specs down there, and we also had Peaches. And so between Specs and Peaches, that's where you got all your cassettes, and that's where you got your tickets. And Specs was still around here on 66th Street when I first moved, but shortly thereafter, it was gone.
Yeah, yeah. No, that was a great thing. I didn't even realize that Specs and Peaches were both that regional, that they were in South Florida. There was a Peaches on 9th Avenue and 58th Street in St. Pete a long time ago. I think it's a used furniture store now. Last time I was there. But funny, I had no idea that, that's a little bit of local stuff for the podcast, but I had no idea that, those two stores, that brings back some fun times.
Right. I sometimes pine for like the traditional music shop and, you know, there's a vinyl resurgence and there's a couple of great stores around here, but you know, my kids, I have two boys, 10 and 16, and they're just never going to experience that smell when you walk into a Peaches.
No, they're not. They're not. Unless they go down to their, there's a place, I think, on Central Avenue in St. Pete that's still like a vinyl museum.
Bananas.
Kind of place. Bananas. Yeah. Yeah, you can still go down there and get vinyl, which is really cool. I think last time we were in St. Pete, I think I walked in there for a few minutes. It's a great little place. But there is a definitive record store smell.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the greatest smell in the world, I'll be honest with you, most of the time. But it's definitely noticeable that it's really cool. And it's definitely something that's missing. You know, I everything's downloaded now. So they may never get that feeling and that connection, that personal connection with music.
Yeah, you know, I don't think they will. I know I didn't grow up in this area, but we've been down here for a little over 3 years. So I didn't get to experience the Specs and the Peaches and all that. But I grew up in Southern California in the Chicago area, and we had a couple of the stores that we had. And this will lead to my very first concert eventually. But the concert or the record store that was in our town, it was actually in Westminster, California. I grew up in Huntington Beach, and we had a Licorice Pizza was the name of the place, which is a great name for a record store, if you ask me. I think it's awesome. And they had like their sign out front had a woman, like an old style 50s, 60s waitress server with a LP in her hand, and it was like steaming, and it's just really, really cool. So what's that?
I said it's neat. That's really neat.
Yeah, it was good. It was good marketing for sure. And then in the Chicago area, we had either Rose Records or oh my gosh, I'm drawing a blank on the Bogarts. Bogarts was the place, and Bogarts was like one of the biggest record stores in on the west side of Chicago. Actually, it wasn't even in the city. It was outside in the burbs, but. You know, that's something that you really are not going to experience nowadays, and that's standing in line, like for tickets. Who stands in line for tickets anymore? Do they even offer that option?
Can you even stand in line for tickets?
Well, I don't know if it's for rock concerts anymore, but there was hundreds of thousands of people standing in line for Hamilton tickets in Tampa recently.
Well, that's true. That is true. That is true. You can stand for sporting event tickets if you go to the venue. You buy tickets at the will call. But in any case, those days are mostly over thanks to Ticketmaster app and, you know, all the other third party sites and all that stuff. Yeah, those days are gone.
Yeah, I remember and not getting into our favorites at this point yet, but I remember standing in line for ZZ Top, and this was up in the Chicago area, and me and this friend of ours or friend of mine, Maria, she was standing in line also, and then they had the lotto kind of thing, you know, where they handed out numbers, not like wristbands. They weren't advanced as wristbands at this point, but she got like number 3 in line, and she got 9th row tickets for ZZ Top and I think the Black Crowes opened up for him.
Wow.
It was early on in their thing. And she bought, like, you know, they had a max of, you can buy 8 tickets or whatever at a time. So she bought 8 and I was able to get in, ride her coattails to go to ZZ Top and Black Crowes, 7th or 9th row, something like that. It was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I wasn't a huge ZZ Top fan. Like I really wanted to be up close and personal, but it was great because, you know, they were kind of popular at the time, especially after Eliminator and and some of the other records that were right around that time. So, let me get started with the topic tonight. The topic is concerts, obviously. We're already talking about concerts, but it's like our favorite concerts and or our favorite moments at certain concerts. And I'm gonna have Robin start out and tell us, like, you know, we're gonna pick like our top three moments or favorite concerts. And you know, you can either start at number three and count up, or you can start at number one, your best absolute favorite, and go the other way. It doesn't really matter. We're kind of free form, and we're just going to talk about three of each of our favorites. So, Robin, what do you want to start with?
I'm going to start with the first sort of real official concert I went to as a teenager with my parents. Because I'm going to save my top concert for last, because okay. It's kind of a big deal.
Okay, cool.
So I'm going to start with the first one, which was 1985, and it was the Thompson Twins and OMD, otherwise known as Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark.
Yes,
and their big hit was If You Leave on the Pretty in Pink soundtrack, which every woman of my generation still kind of goes, oh, when that song comes on. But I still think Molly Ringwald should have ended up with Ducky at the end of that movie. I'm just saying. Okay. So, yeah, I went to see Thompson Twins and OMD. It was the tour to support their album Here's to Future Days, which is an amazing, underrated album. Mm-hmm. And it was sponsored by Swatch.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And so Swatch's advertisements for the concert would feature the Thompson Twins. Swatch presents the Thompson Twins Tour for Future Days. But then underneath it, it would say, get your Swatch on.
Nice.
And I remember just being overwhelmed by the whole experience. This was like my first big arena sized concert. I got so dressed up, like ridiculously dressed up, you guys. Flowered jeans with, you know, two color coordinating socks and those thin, skinny little leather belts. I had like coordinating belts, the off the shoulder sweatshirt,
nice.
giant hair. I'm responsible for part of the hole in the ozone layer for that concert alone. And
Aquanet?
Rave was my hairspray of choice.
Okay.
So there's any women listening to this are like, mm-hmm. So we were
Motley,
in these
Motley Crue had bought all of the Aquanet by then. There was none left. So she probably couldn't find it. It wasn't even in the stores.
Oh, that's hilarious. So we were in these nosebleed seats and I was just so excited. So OMD plays and it's all their hits and I'm interested, but I was really there for Thompson Twins. I was a huge Thompson Twins fan, but I did really like the hit song of the time, If You Leave, from Pretty in Pink. And I really wanted to see that live. But I was a concert noob. And so I didn't realize that you shouldn't wolf down this huge soda right away, because then you're going to have to go to the restroom. And so, you know, we were in the nosebleeds. So it was a long haul to go to the restrooms. And I remember being in the restroom in the stall when the opening bars of If You Leave came on. And I almost cried. Like, I'm pretty sure I shed a tear because, you know, my teenage self was like, I'm missing it.
Yeah.
And I remember literally dragging my mother out of the restroom to like get back to our seats as fast as we could so I could at least see like the tail end of it. But when Thompson Twins came on, as I mentioned, it was sponsored by Swatch. So the curtain goes up, the lights go on, and there are these two giant Swatch watches on either side of the stage. It was just the coolest thing you've ever seen. And they had such big personalities with like the cool color block clothing that just looked so, I just thought the Thompson Twins looked so multicultural and European, you know, they just didn't dress like Americans of the 80s dressed. And it was just so fascinating to me, like their whole look, at their whole sound, such a good show. And they did what not a lot of bands do, even back then, is they interacted with the audience. So they would stop in between songs and tell stories. They would ask questions. They would do some call and response. And so it was such a great first experience as far as concerts go. And one of the weird things that I still remember is the woman in the Thompson Twins, Alana Curry, you know, she had that famous sort of giant curly mohawk hair, yeah, right?
Kind of a oversized bouffant, if you will.
Oh man. I mean, she was huge. She was hair with the person underneath, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
And I remember her saying, like, you know, oh, and I see some of you in the audience are going to give me a run for my money with my hair, you know? And I mean, naive me was like, she's talking to me. it's just indelible in my mind, that concert experience. There was so much visually that was interesting. And they just put on an amazing show. And I'll never forget those giant Swatch watches till the day I die.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to jump in here and plug another show real quick. And at the St. Pete Podcasters, I just met a guy named Adam, and he has a podcast, and it's called, what is it called? It's a play on words. I'm going to have to look it up. I'm sorry. Blowing this one here. Give me just a second. Are we friends, or are electric friends, or something like that? And he
Our Friends Electric?
Our Friends Electric. Thank you. Our Friends Electric. Not our, but A-R-E, Friends Electric. And his show with the, he does a lot of the new wave and 80s stuff. Mm-hmm. But then his second season is really cool because it's about, like, bands that are good, but they come out with this really bad song or something, or a bad album, and it's so fun to listen to him. He's so passionate about it. It's really cool. Anyway, so back to the topic. I was not a fan of the new wave movement until later in life, but now I love it. Like the Psychedelic Furs. And a lot of those bands, I'm on board because it brings me back to that time, you know, when we were growing up, and you know, 85, you said, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And don't even get me started on Duran Duran, man. We'll be here all night.
Okay, so I had a friend. I was on yearbook staff in high school, and 85,
of course you were.
Oh, shush. I was a photographer for that at the time, and I wish I had more pictures from back then. I can't find any of them. Anyway, so there was a girl also on yearbook staff. Her name was Natalie Oslin, and she had all the miniature buttons that you could collect, like hundreds of them on her purse. You couldn't even see the purse. It was just like this barrage of Duran Duran miniature buttons. And you know what I'm talking about, the mini buttons, the pin-on ones, which there were not just Duran Duran. There were just all kinds of bands. It was great. But she was very focused on Duran Duran. And I used to lay into her about it. I used to make fun of her because I was kind of a, you know, I like Judas Priest and Crocus and AC/DC and all that stuff. So Duran Duran was far out of my wheelhouse at the time. But
see,
yeah, we had a lot of fun poking fun at her. But then years later, I'm like, you know, I kind of like it because it brings me back to that moment, those times. And I'll never forget Natalie for her love of Duran Duran.
So I did the opposite, Scott. I was very much into New Wave and New Romantics and all that stuff. And it was later. I was aware of it and I liked some of it, but it was actually later that I got into hard rock and metal and any of that sort of stuff. But, you know, it's funny. It was so easy for dudes to pick on Duran Duran back in the day. But if you go, you can go and look on YouTube and stuff where they isolate like the synthesizer track or the bass track.
Yeah.
It, like, you know, that stuff was complicated. There's a lot of bassists today who could never lay down a bass track the way that John Taylor can.
Okay. And be careful where you tread here, because Chris is a bass player.
So then he can attest to how difficult they are and how complicated some of them are. It ain't the fluffy pop that everyone thought it was. And there are many bands today that would not be here were they not influenced by my beloved Duran Duran.
I'll agree with that.
I will say it is because John Taylor was inspired a lot by funk music.
Mm-hmm.
He loved funk, like Parliament Funkadelic and those kinds of bands. And his bass playing was reminiscent of that in some spots. He's actually a very talented musician. He's a brilliant bass player. And they were all talented in Duran Duran. But that was, you know, again, back at a time when bands played their own instruments. And Duran Duran was very talented. It was a very talented band. I mean, it wasn't guitar driven and guitar heavy, and that it's two separate genres in the 80s that never kind of meshed together. You know, the guitar driven metal and the synthesizer rhythm based, you know, new wave music. And so, but John Taylor is very talented. He is very talented. I just listened to Duran Duran the other day. I'll be honest with you. I did. And I was not the hugest fan back then. It depended on which girl liked that kind of music. Then I was a fan. That's how I became a fan of NXS, because Tisha Napier liked NXS.
Now, so, I'll say NXS was awesome. I liked NXS.
That's a good band. Yeah. Very good band.
Good stuff.
R.I.P. Mr. Hutchins. Do you want me to do a concert?
Yeah, let's move on to Chris. Let's start with your, like, kind of go with what Robin started. You know, start with like your third favorite, and then we'll work up to the number
one. Yeah. So I think mine was in Tampa, 1988, Monsters of Rock.
Nice.
In Tampa Stadium. So that was my very first big concert, like a festival type concert. I had been to concerts, the typical metal concert where there was an opening act and the headliner, or maybe a opening act, you know, that kind. But this was the first one that there was like six bands.
Wow.
And I think it was Van Halen and the Scorpions.
Yes. Kingdom Come.
Was it? I know Metallica was there because I went expressly to see Metallica.
Kingdom Come, Metallica, Dokken, Van Halen, and who was the other one you said?
That's it.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. Anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, I know you went to see Metallica.
I did. I went to see Metallica, and they were great, as you know they have been.
Now this
always.
Was what, 88?
This is 88.
Okay.
And let me tell you something. So this particular concert was the perfect mess. It was an absolute disaster. So a food fight broke out during the concert between the upper and lower decks. It was ridiculous. This was in Tampa Stadium, old Tampa Stadium, the football stadium.
Before Raymond James came along.
Right. The other stadium was right next to Raymond James. It's now demolished in a parking lot, but it was in the same place. So
yeah, you got to remember, I'm not from the area, so I don't remember all this history.
Right. So where Raymond James is about, old Tampa Stadium.
Okay.
So just a ton of people there, food fight all over the stadium. The entire stadium just turned into an absolute mess. People being crushed up front. They allowed way too many general admission people into the stadium. It was all GA tickets, so you could sit where you want based on how early you got there to get in. Just a disaster, but the music was so good. Metallica was fantastic, which turned out after that tour, that was the last tour that they were ever not a headliner. That was it. Because right after that, And Justice for All came out the following year, and they were no longer an opening act for anyone. That was the last time they were not an opening act. But just a great concert. I mean, Van Halen was, I think, on OU812, you know, so they had two records under their belt with Van Hagar. Dokken, I really don't care if Dokken was there or not, so I really have much to say about Dokken. Scorpions were great. Kingdom Come sounded just like Diet Led Zeppelin, like they always did.
Yeah.
That's such a great analogy.
It is. They are. They're great value Led Diet Zeppelin. Led. That's what they always wanted to be. They are. It's just a terrible band. You know, but they were there to fill a role, and the good-looking guys with long hair. So there you go. Probably had a cucumber in their pants, like Spinal Tap.
Nice.
So all the girls loved them. But it was a great show, just a fantastic show. And the enormity of 60-some thousand, 70,000 people in a stadium just blew me away. Because before that, I had been to concerts, which like at the Bayfront Center in St. Pete. And I know most people on the podcast might not know these venues I'm talking about, but it's like 3,000 or 4,000 people, six tops, you know, where it was not certainly not intimate, but definitely not on that scale. So it was just huge, like to take everything in. And then being on the field for the concert, the mosh pits that broke out, you know, the random elbows that you would get. And it was fun back then. Like that was what to do, you know? Mm. But, the funniest part of that whole concert is Dokken had the worst PA system in history. Nothing worked for like a while for some reason. And it turned out later that Dokken's PA frequency was Tampa Airport. So Tampa Airport was interfering with their PA system, their wireless system. It was on the same frequency. In the middle of the show, they had to change out all of their wireless configuration because it kept getting like different noises on it from the interference. And turned out later that, yes, it was. It actually was on the same frequency as Tampa Airport. So that's why I say it was a perfect mess. Like the concert was great and everything. But it's just like one of those concerts where everything that could go wrong and was bad about a concert, and at the same time, everything that's great about a concert. And it was just my first big, giant, huge outdoor stadium show, and I was sold. Like, I wanted to hide in a trailer somewhere and just follow the show around the country. I could care less. Family, parents, brother, school, forget it. I want to do this. This is great. So that's my show. That's number three, number first one, whichever, however you want to configure it. Yeah, that was just incredible. Just an amazing experience.
I'm having fun imagining people on random airplanes all of a sudden getting Dokken.
Like you're trying to list, like 1988, you're trying to... Well, they didn't even have movies on airplanes then, I don't think. I don't remember, but how crazy would it be that you're just like sitting there and all of a sudden you think the pilot's coming over the PA system and it's Dokken.
To sing Our Love is Burning Like a Flame.
Right, exactly. Just complete panic, like in the movie Airplane, where everyone gets out of the seats and runs in the aisles. Like just total mayhem on the plane. Pilot has no idea what to do. You know, everything's going crazy. I mean, it's just great. It's like thinking back about that memory is really, really fun. And the fact that it was an all-day thing. It wasn't a 2.5-hour concert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This was an all-day deal. Like all day. And I think the tickets for that with five bands, was it five or six bands, whatever it was? I think it was $27.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But think about back then, that's twice what a normal ticket would cost. If you went to see some of these bands, they were $15. Yeah. You know?
I don't remember I don't remember how much I used to spend, but thinking about it now, knowing what prices go for now. Seats go for now, it's that $27. I'd be all over that.
That would
I would jump on that in a second. I wouldn't even blink an eye.
If you went to that today with five acts like that are that kind of spectrum, that'd be a $250 ticket.
Yeah, $250, $300 easy. So, exactly. Real quick, I dropped out for a second there.
I thought I saw that.
Yeah, and I was trying to mute it because I needed to clear my throat, and I hit the wrong button, and it ended the call for a second. You guys kept talking, so I might have missed maybe about 10 seconds of your conversation, but we're good. We're good to go. Bounced right back in. We're all good. We are recording again. I'm just going to merge the two recordings. Okay. So anyway, awesome story. And I can follow up with that a little bit with my wife actually still has a Monsters of Rock t-shirt. She went to the show also up in the Chicago area at Rosemont Theater. I think it was Rosemont. But you know, she was blown away by it. anyway, so she went, she still has a Monsters of Rock t-shirt, and I swear I wish I had some of that stuff from back then. Judas Priest, whatever t-shirts that I went to, I really wish I had some of that stuff, but she still has it, and it's like paper thin. And like, she can't even wash it anymore because it'll just fall, it'll disintegrate at this point. But yeah, she went to the Monsters of Rock back up in 88 when they were touring around too. And what a great lineup. I mean, Metallica and Van Halen together on the same stage is bizarre.
Yeah, it was great. And well, it wasn't Van Halen. It was the other.
Van Hagar. Sorry.
Yeah.
Pardon me. Which I just heard a podcast talk about that whole thing between the Hagar and the David Lee Roth recently. Anyway, awesome combination of people. And I've never been to like a big show like that, where it's a multiple huge bands. I mean, not just like an opening band and a headliner like you mentioned before. But so anyway. Let's, Robin, did you have anything to add to the Monsters of Rock?
No, only to say that I am firmly in the David Lee Roth camp.
Okay.
And that is one band that I never got to see, that if I could go back in time, I'd go back and see a Van Halen show.
Yeah, it was before I was able to go to concerts like by myself.
Yeah, same.
At that time, like right at that, it was almost like right at the cutoff, honestly, of I think I went to my first concert like with friends right after they had stopped playing together. So yeah, I'm very much in the David Lee Roth camp also. So yeah, there's no question. But they were good. I mean, they were good. Eddie Van Halen still had hips at that point, so he could move around the stage, and I mean, so yeah, they were good. I can't say anything bad. They were good. They played the way that they played. It sounded like Van Halen with Sammy Hagar, like it was supposed to, and they were really good. They were very good. And Eddie was, you know, back then he was still like right in his prime guitar wise. So to be able to see him live, and I saw him a few times after that, and there was a noticeable difference in his playing as the years went by. Like, you could see a progression of him getting older. Mm-hmm. But I kind of got to see him sort of in his peak, or towards the end of his peak anyway. So that was great, because that's something awesome that I'll always remember, of being able to see Eddie be Eddie. Mm-hmm. As a guitar player. So that's another really cool memory from that concert.
Very cool. So, Robin, that brings us back to you. What's your number two?
So I was flipping through. I have saved as many of my concert tickets as I could.
Oh, see, yeah. That's something I never did, and I really wish I would have. I'd have a stack full.
Yeah, I'm pushing 200 at this point.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I have no. Gracious. I cannot compete with that by any means.
I was not joking when I said. It's in my blood.
Yeah.
So you were talking about ticket prices earlier, and I just want to say, flipping through these tickets, the most expensive one that I'm going to talk about today was $32. Isn't that crazy?
There you go.
And so I was like, talk about...
What year was that?
That was 95.
95.
Yeah, 1995.
It's how much? 37,
32?
32. $32.95.
And yeah, and that wasn't even a festival. So I went to four of the Lollapaloozas. Mm-hmm. and let's see, 25, 26, 28. The last Lollapalooza that I went to was like 36. That was in 1996.
Wow. Yeah, that's time. Damn, prices have changed dramatically.
It's painful.
I know it is. It really is. Like you really have you have to like really consider the options when you're looking at prices. Like I'm gonna say something about Chris right now. So Chris and his wife Rosetta.
Oh boy.
No, it's good. It's all good. Chris and his wife Rosetta. We went over there. This is about 2 years ago now. Two and a half years ago. We were over at their house for a 4th of July get together. And, it was the weekend before 4th of July. And Rosetta's not a huge Metallica fan. Okay. Chris is like, you know, that's his ultimate favorite band. I've known this for years, a couple years now. And so we're in their pool and we're hanging out and Rosetta's like, yeah, I'm going to go to this Metallica concert and it's like a couple days away. It's like 2 days away. And I'm just going to bring my headphones and zone out. I'm like, you're going to what?
Yeah.
And she goes, why would you want to go? I'm like, do you have any idea how awesome it would be to go see Metallica? I've been wanting to see Metallica since 1986, Master of Puppets came out. I've wanted to see them, but it just never worked out either. Either I was broke or the timing wasn't right or the venue wasn't right, you know, with where I was and just things didn't work out. And suddenly, like, she's going to go see a Metallica concert and put her headphones on and listen to, I don't know, Coldplay or something.
Right.
Chris, correct me. I don't know who she would listen to.
Who knows? Bon Jovi, probably.
Oh, Bon Jovi. No. She's a huge Bon Jovi fan. I get that. But huge. I'm like, you're going to what? And I was like, I can't believe you would actually go to that. She's like, well, would you rather go instead? I'm like, well, yeah. And Chris is part of this, you know, the Metallica fan club or something. You got some kind of great deal for these seats for $100. And a lot of people would, you know, like, well, $100, I'm going to pay $100. But really, $100 for the seats that we had were unbelievable.
Yeah, we were really close to the stage, on the side.
We're on just off the, and it's the best. It's my favorite place to see a concert. Like the favorite position in a stadium to see a concert. I'm like, I'll pay $100 all day long for those seats.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it was a great show.
Was incredible. And it, you know, it was only 2 years ago, so they had a lot of their newer stuff, but they played a lot of great stuff from back when we were growing up.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's not my concert. That's not the pick that I'm talking about. But it's not one of my picks. Although I love Metallica, and it would be one of my picks, but we need to talk about the 80s and 90s. So,
right.
Anyway, so what was your second pick, Robin?
I was going to talk. No, your tangent was good because it helped me decide. Because as I said, I'm looking at tons of concert tickets, and I'm like, which one I want to talk about? It's my second one. Mm-hmm. And so you telling me what a big fan Chris is of Metallica has actually changed my mind for what my number two one is I'm going to talk about. But the runner up, which I was going to talk about, was seeing Faith No More open for Billy Idol.
Okay.
In 1990. And that was a hell of a show. Billy Idol sucked. but instead, I'm going to talk about the first concert that I got to go to by myself. Even though I found out later that my father sat in the parking lot the whole time just to make sure we didn't get murdered.
Nice.
But I went with my high school friend, Christy Nutter, who was the one who introduced me to the world of metal. And we went to see Metallica's And Justice for All tour in 1989. And Queensryche opened up.
Nice.
And that began my love of the wonderful over-the-topness that is Queensryche. Jeff Tate. I was like, up until recently, man, he could still get it. He's such a fabulous performer. And for a while there, all through like the early 2000s, every time Queensryche would come to town, my mother and I would go see them because it was just going to be a great show. And I saw when they played Operation Mindcrime from start to finish live, which was amazing. But that was not in the 80s. So here I am, 1989, by myself with my pal Christy Nutter, who introduced me to Metallica, watching Queensryche and Metallica at the West Palm Beach Auditorium in West Palm Beach, Florida. And you can, like, I would encourage folks to Google the stage set for this tour, because this was before people were having big, elaborate stage sets. I mean, it was kind of amazing. So Queensryche played in front of a curtain, and it was this little dinky thing. And then the curtain goes down, and that giant blind Justice is behind the stage, and there's so many freaking pyrotechnics. I'd never seen anything like it. And at some point, you know, things start breaking, and like the Justice cracks, and there's just all these special effects and all these amazing things going on, and just a blistering show. So good, so good. But it's funny, I remember this stage set, and I remember dumb things. Like, everyone talks about teenage boy hormones, but I think teenage girl hormones might have been just as bad, because the strongest memory I have of that show is seeing Jeff Tate on the side of the stage changing his shirt and, like, going, oh, my God, he doesn't have a shirt on. You know, like, that is the thing that I could tell you about in great detail. Much more than the rest of the show, but it was heavily influential. And I remember, you know, I was really hanging out with like the Cure Bauhaus syndicate at my high school when my friend Christy got me into Metallica. And I could never understand why the goth people and the metal people didn't like the same music, right? Like, wow. It's the same chord progressions, just at different speeds. And we're talking about like the same topics, you know, just in different tones. And it just seems so synonymous with me. Like, why would you not love Bauhaus as much as you love Metallica? And, you know, I'd come to school in an Iron Maiden shirt, and people would be like, what is wrong with you? I'm like, no, wait, don't you get it? That was my first concert by myself with my pal, who, quick side note, is coming to town, and we are going to see the Not So Silent Night with Hailstorm in this moment. So Hailstorm, I haven't seen this woman.
Nice.
And we haven't seen this woman in like 20 years, and we're both still into this kind of music, and she's driving in from Georgia just to go see this concert with me, and I think that's kind of amazing.
Nice. Wow. It's funny you said that about Jeff Tate without a shirt on the side of the stage, because I had a similar thing happen, but it was actually with a woman in a band, and I was backstage, and she ran back to the backstage because she ripped her shirt on her guitar, and she completely ripped her shirt off to change her shirt. And I'm standing backstage, and I'm like, oh, she has no clothes on. That's interesting.
It's like seared into your memory, isn't it?
It is. It is. That whole night. Some of it is.
You have to tell
some of it's gone.
You can't tell that story and not
some
tell
of it's
what
gone. Some of it's all gone. Okay, I'll tell you that story. I'll tell you that story if we have time.
Please,
if we have time to finish.
Go for it.
Please. So, would you want me to do my second concert?
Oh, I don't even know if I picked my first one. Did I?
Oh. No.
We skipped right over you.
I skipped right over myself and went right to Robin again.
Robin and I have a thing going on.
Okay,
here.
So
you
I'm going
to
settle
down. Yeah,
we don't
need
you anymore, Scott.
Settle down, Scott.
I'm just going to mediate.
Worry about your greyhounds.
And next up, hey, come on now. Hey, we got three adopted this weekend.
Oh, my God. Here we go. Seriously. I hope you got till 10:30.
No,
do you remember what I said, Robin? What did I say? What did I say at the meeting? I'm either the podcast guy or the Greyhound guy.
I know. But I'm going to enable it because I fell in love with those pictures of Johnny Cash. That dog.
Johnny's cool.
No, those. Yeah, the dogs are beautiful. They're fantastic. And we go over to Scott and Chrissy's all the time. And those dogs are just awesome. They're fantastic dogs. Anyone listening to the podcast, I highly recommend, if you're looking for a dog, getting involved with the Greyhound adoption that Scott represents, because those dogs are absolutely phenomenal. They're great with kids. They don't shed. They're not nippers. They don't really bark a whole lot.
They don't smell.
Just God forbid they get out of the house, because forget about chasing them. Just get in your car because you're not going to get them.
They move very fast.
They can move a little bit.
Johnny Cash, which we've never had a dog named after a celebrity until we actually named them. We named a couple of fosters ago. We named one Devo, and then we named another one Sharona, which was after the Nax, my Sharona. Mm-hmm. And now we have actually his racing name is Johnny Cash. And I'm like, that's so cool. And he's black. He's a big black dog. So he's the man in black. He's the man in black. And he is being adopted.
So we
found his home this weekend. He's one of the three that got adopted this weekend.
Great.
And he'll be at our house for about another month until things get rolling and the new family can take him. Anyway, cool. Just totally side note. We love Greyhounds. It's obvious. If you listen to the podcast normally, you'll hear me mention them often. So anyway, where was I going? Oh, I totally skipped over my third pick. Right?
All right, we'll pick one then.
Let me just throw it out there real quick. Chicago, I believe it was somewhere around 89 or 90. Oingo Boingo played at a very small venue. I think it held about 1,400 people, and it was just one of the most amazing shows I've ever seen.
Oh my God, I'm so freaking jealous of you right now.
It was amazing, and it was general admission, and they were rocking the house. It was really, it was just an incredible show, and I believe it was at the Riviera, North Side Chicago, and this place is ancient, and I do believe that some of the ceiling material was falling off the ceiling, and it wasn't because they were just too loud. It's old, and you know, any vibration is going to cause that. But it was incredible. And I had moved from California to Chicago in 89, and I drove across country with a friend of mine, Scott Elliott, who was the biggest Oingo Boingo fan I've ever met. And when I was living in Chicago, he had moved to Nebraska, actually Omaha, to go to college. And I called him up and I said, I actually had to dial a phone. You know, we didn't have cell phones. I had to actually dial a phone and said, hey man, Oingo Boingo is coming to town. You should drive out. So he brought like two of his buddies from college, and we went to this concert, and I think it had to be about 90. And Oingo Boingo, and it was awesome. General seating, general admission. We were like right up front. And Scott, I still can't believe how big of a fan he was. He knew every word to every single song that was out there, even the obscure ones. And it's just one of those moments that the guy that I had talked to, the guy that I had talked into going, he liked Oingo Boingo, but he wasn't a huge fan. But he walked away going, wow, that was pretty freaking amazing. So anyway, that's my my first pick. So
cool.
That's awesome.
It was
Danny Elfman is amazing.
Yeah, and I'll have to tell you a little bit more about Elfman as we go on. There's a movie you need to see, Robin. If you're an Elfman fan, you need to see a movie. So Robin made her second pick. Why don't we get back to Chris? Because because I'm all over the place. It's just what I do. I go on tangents. It's like on our podcast, our normal podcast between me and Dave and Rose, I'm the tangent king. So it just happens. So we are going to pause right there. We went so long in our conversation about concerts that we needed to split this up into two episodes. So be sure to tune in next time on Bonsai Retro Club and 80s Mixtape Auto Reverse to continue the conversation. And we will pick up where Chris is about to pick his number two concert. So come back next time and we will talk to you later.
This has been a Bonsai Retro Club production.
Bonsai, Daniel-san!
Hey, Bonsai!
Bonsai!
Bonsai!